Strangers and Aliens, episode 78.
Strangers and Aliens summer movie series.
Pacific Rim. Hello, welcome to another episode of Strangers and Aliens, and welcome to another episode where Dr. Jace and Steve aren't here right now. This is our summer movie series, and we have been hitting up some of the big summer movie blockbusters, and as of last episode and this, block failures. I'm alone. Again, I went and saw Pacific Rim, went and saw it in the theater, I guess obviously because I don't know if there's any bootlegs going around. I don't do that anyway. Dr. Jason Steve did not. And it sounds like Steve might be going sometime soon, but who knows. So I'm alone. I don't want to be alone. I need to talk about this movie, though. This is a movie that deserves to be talked about. A lot like I felt Lone Ranger deserved to be talked about. I need someone to talk to about this movie, and trying to think of who I know that would be interested in talking about a movie about giant robots punching giant monsters in the face. I have to say, the first name that comes to mind of people who might be interested in talking about this movie is my friend J.S. Earls. You know, like Hank, he's a listener to the podcast, so he's not unfamiliar to you guys if you've listened to any of the feedback episodes. He's left some feedback. He's a comic book writer, and I know he's written things outside of the comic book industry as well. He's a music composer. In fact, one of the tracks from one of his albums is what we use for our Welcome to Level 7 podcast at welcometolevel7.com, just in case you're wondering. It's about the Marvel Universe. Anyway, back to J.S. Earls. I think he's the guy I should call. I really do think he is. He's a big anime fan. I know he likes things about giant robots running around doing stuff. So, yeah, I think I'm going to see if I can get a hold of him. Hello, JS. This is Ben. Are you there?
I am here.
Excellent. Okay. So, I had the same problem with Lone Ranger. I'm having it with Pacific Rim now. Dr. Jace, Steve, not interested in seeing it. And so I need to talk about it with someone. I know you like monsters, and I figured you were going to see this movie. Yes. You want to talk about Pacific Rim?
Definitely.
Let's do it then. All right. Thanks for filling in then, because I don't know what's wrong with those two guys, man. They're part of the problem.
They are.
So yeah, Pacific Rim, Kobe Radcliffe from the Sci-Fi Christian basically said it was going to flop. It was going to fail, and it was going to be horrible. And he was, in my opinion, half right. It flopped. And that's why I say Dr. Jason Steve are part of the problem. It's because people just weren't going to see it.
Yeah, well, and maybe Kobe has too much power, too.
That's true. Maybe he has power over Dr. Jason Steve. We'll have to look into that. I can't see how someone like Kobe, who loves Power Rangers so much, could decide before seeing this movie he hates this movie.
I know. Well, you know, there's a lot of people, though, that didn't see it that like similar things with, and they don't realize that it's important for them to see it so they can get movies made, you know, on those other things. But
yeah, well, I think Godzilla fans felt safe.
Yeah.
Like Godzilla, the Godzilla movie is happening regardless.
Yep.
What really this is kind of an indictment on is Guillermo del Toro, where if he's going to do any kind of big movie like The Mountains of Madness, that's more unlikely to happen now.
Yeah, although, I did send you the thing, this was actually his biggest opening of any of his films, though. Money wise, so.
But what does that mean compared to what this movie cost? Here's what I want to know. I've seen domestic returns for the weekend, and it was like what, 41 or something like that. Is that right? 41 million. And I'm curious, is this something that's going to do well overseas?
Yeah, I mean, well, so far it is. So far it's doing better over there than it is here.
Okay. Do you have any numbers? Or?
I don't have any numbers okay. with me, but I know I was looking at it. And yeah, I mean, from what I'm seeing and from what I'm hearing of unbiased people's opinions, that it's going to easily make its money back, especially with the overseas numbers, because it is doing better overseas, which I kind of expected anyways, but with the big Chinese and Japanese markets. I mean, and it's obviously going to appeal to them, so...
Yeah, and it has a very strong Japanese and Chinese element in it.
Yes.
With the setting and with one of the main characters. The setting being most of the movie takes place in China.
Right.
And then one of the main characters is Japanese. So, yeah. Well, let's just jump right into the actual going through this movie here. Let's grade this movie, all right? A through F, you're a teacher, JS, right now. You're a teacher of monster movieology. And Guillermo del Toro has just turned in his thesis, and you're going to, although I don't know if they do A through F grades on theses, but anyway, you're going to grade it. He's just turned in his report, his monster movie report, A through F. What do you give this movie?
You know, it's kind of hard, but I'm saying for what it is and for what he meant it to be, I would give it a B+.
Okay. I am going to give it a C+.
I figured you'd be lower.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, and I've mentioned this before, but when I was a teacher, I always had these students who they could do so much better.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm grading him on what he turned in, but also what he's capable of.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm giving him a C+, which is not a failing grade. It's a solid movie. There could have been more to it.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest thing is, and you know this too. I mean, when you deal with big companies or big publishers and different things, you're only allowed to do so much. And especially when you're doing something kind of new, or at least something old that's being done in a new way, they kind of encourage you to play safe. And he might even you know, limited himself to try to play a little bit safe too.
Well,
so
let me say this. I have heard. I do not know how truthful this is, but I've heard it from two different sources. Of people who apparently saw the same source, but that he cut an hour from this movie.
Yeah, he did.
And the hour that he cut was mostly character stuff.
Yeah.
And
that's
what I'm hearing. And if that's true, boy, first of all, I'd love to see this director's cut of this movie, because he does character stuff so well.
Yeah. You know, I will say that I did actually, I heard that interview or something, and where he definitely said that himself, that he cut an hour, but he also said that he has no intentions of doing a director's cut.
Well, maybe they'll do deleted scenes then.
Hopefully they'll do something with them.
Because I was excited about Pacific Rim, and this kind of gets into the next step of what we're doing here, which is,
expectations.
Yeah, our expectations. I went in with the expectations, with basically two expectations. One, this would be big, huge, loud, exciting, and brilliant looking monster fights.
Right.
And my expectations were met in that area.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing I was expecting was character moments and characters who I would relate to, and even if they weren't like me. Like, in Pan's Labyrinth, I relate to the little girl. I'm able to relate to her. I've never been a little girl in my entire life.
I was going to say, I don't know. Are you sure, Ben?
Yeah, and I didn't grow up, you know, in Spain, in the war, you know. And,
no, but you're Scottish, so you wear a dress, right?
No, I'm not really Scottish. but anyway, I look at this, and I'm just thinking to myself, I'm expecting there to be a deeper monster movie, you know,
right.
And one of the things I like about Godzilla movies, the ones that work for me are the ones where the monster stuff reflects the human stuff.
Right.
And the monster stuff almost becomes like a metaphor for what's going on with the human characters. And I was kind of expecting that kind of thing. And I didn't get that. Now, that's not the movie he was making though.
Right.
And
well, let me say real quick too, The thing that I've heard him say too was that more than the monsters, he actually used the robots to say what he was wanting to say. As far as with he really wanted to have themes of unity mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's where the whole merging of the minds thing came in. And that's what, I mean, he's even said that that he used the robot, which I know may sound bizarre to some people, but he used the robots to basically represent like life and that we're in this together.
I can see that.
So he was actually, even though other people have used monsters in the past, he was actually, from his point of view, he was using robots. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like that's where my kind of grading kind of comes in, is because I would have, I mean, for, if I was just purely grading it on what I wanted, I'd say C+. But I had watched so many interviews and so many documentaries on the making of this. Like I knew exactly what he was making and what he was doing, and so it wasn't a shock to me. And with a lot of this stuff that he did it the way that he did it, but I was a little surprised to hear him say some of those things though about him kind of viewing it as the robot is kind of like the world or like life, and that we're in this together, and that we have to depend on each other and trust each other.
I can see that though, in the robots, you know, in this movie, you have two pilots because the mental control of the robot is too much for one human to handle. But if you link two people and link their brains basically, so they're sharing memories and sharing impulses and that sort of thing, they can do it. They can pilot it, and they're not going to die of some weird disease that never gets fully developed. But so when they're doing that, you know, they have to be in sync and they have to be trusting of each other. And in the way that, like, when you think of Star Trek and the as a family and the Enterprise is their home, I can see that kind of metaphor happening there with Pacific Rim. And I could definitely see that idea of we're in this together, we need to work together, we need to trust each other. And, you know, if we're going to defeat the outside opponent, whatever it is, and in this case it's giant monsters, you know, we need to link together and be together. And there's some interesting ideas there, but they never get really fully developed.
Right.
I guess it does come kind of close when and we don't want to give too many spoilers, because I do want people to see this movie in the theater. I think it's definitely something to be seen in the theater, which we'll talk about that in a second here. But
yeah,
there are some characters towards the end who get linked that you're not expecting to get linked, or that you are expecting to get linked and you're wondering what's going to happen when it happens. And, you know, it's about their relationships.
Right.
And there's a lot of relationships when you think about this.
Yeah, there are.
There's father, son, there's brothers, there's guy and girl, there's kind of mentor and mentee kind of thing going on. There's rivals who are, you know, and they're all linking together, or they're all like connecting their brains together. So there's some interesting stuff with that. And that is the one addition to kaiju mythology, so to speak, you know, if there is one, that's kind of a cool addition with this technology of linking the brains. So,
I definitely like that. And are we talking about expectations right now?
We're still talking about expectations, yeah.
Okay, because I wanted to say, and this may come out of left field.
My
feeling for this movie, especially after seeing and hearing so much and hearing him talk about it during the making of it and his vision for it, of just being such an kind of a love letter to giant robots and monsters movies, and being so much of an homage and kind of like paying honor to those. I honestly, this is going to sound crazy, it reminded me, and I was almost kind of expecting a Superman Returns kind of thing. Because, you know what I mean?
Because
Superman Returns paid so much like honor and, you know, paid so much homage to the other Superman movies, that it didn't do enough on its own to really become its own beast. And that's kind of like what I feel like this is. Like he was so focused on kind of honoring those things and just doing so much different stuff to, you know, kind of symbolize those things and to speak to those things and that kind of a love letter and everything to those ideas and concepts, that I think it kind of limited kind of the execution of like what you said, what it could have been, because he was so focused on honoring those things And that's the way I really felt with Superman Returns, which I didn't think was a horrible movie, but it was just, you know, I mean, the whole time was just kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know, kind of paying honor to the different, you know, Superman and Superman 2 and just so much. And even just, you know, trying to get somebody that looked like Christopher Reeves a little. And so, yeah. You know, I think that kind of weakened it a little. And that's kind of the vibe that I kind of got, was just like, and just from so many of the things, I mean, he talks so much more about the past and how things affected him as a child and how he wanted to honor those memories and do all this different stuff that he talked. I mean, for like probably 75%, he talked about that, and 25%, he talked about new things. So, I mean,
interesting.
I don't know. That's kind of the vibe that I got from it.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have gotten, I didn't see all the interviews, so I wouldn't have gotten that vibe necessarily straight away. You know, at the very end, there's a title card that comes up that's talks about being in memory of Harry Harryhausen. Ray Harryhausen and Ishiro Honda. Yeah. You know, who are behind, you know, the biggest monster movies of all ever. And you know, and so seeing that title card come up, I'm like, yeah, definitely, I can see that. I didn't feel like he was necessarily beholding himself to that, because the creature design, now, I mean, we're moving away from expectations.
Right.
But the creature design in this movie was so out there, and it feels like Guillermo del Toro. I mean, it feels like his kind of creatures. And that's one place where it's definitely his handprint on this movie.
Yeah.
And according to, again, another source that I don't know this. This is probably from people who've watched some of these same interviews that you watched.
Right, yeah.
But they designed like 200 of these things and used 20.
Yeah, it was like 100. It was 100 of each, 100 robots and 100 of the monsters. And they said that every week they had like an American Idol competition, and they would all vote on which monsters or which robots got kicked off that they would actually be using. But yeah, but they literally did design like 100 monsters and 100. Robots,
and they're fantastic looking. I love the robots are so cool looking. Now they're not robots, because it's humans controlling them,
right?
So it's more like a mech or a
I
think mech might be the best way to call it. But and the monster, I mean, these things are so cool looking.
Oh yeah,
so cool looking. Oh man.
Yeah, and honestly, I actually liked them better in the film than I did in the previews. Like, actually seeing them on the big screen and just kind of the graceful movements and the powerful movement. Like, I actually, because I wasn't that crazy about the designs when I originally saw the designs, because I'd rather see, like, a Gundam robot or some other thing. But, like, seeing it on, I liked it the more we got to see coming up to it. But then I really liked it on the big screen, and that was... And that was one of the things that a lot of people around me in the theater were saying, that they were like, I could believe that we could actually make these. Like, I actually believe that we made these.
And again, that comes back to, again, some sources
that
aren't original. But they were saying that he started from the inside out. Like, they actually kind of worked out how would this work, you know? And so you have – there's a very physical and very palpable – feeling to these robots, where you're seeing people inside and doing the movements. And you know, it's like with Iron Man, they didn't use CGI for Iron Man as much as they could have, or maybe would have, and instead did have a costume, an actual person on set who was moving around in the armor. And so you have these pilots, you know, who are piloting these robots and moving their arms and moving their legs to make the movements happen for the creature. Or the robot, rather. And for them to do this, you feel the movement. You feel the momentum. And when it's walking through water, and then it cuts to the pilot, and his legs are moving slower as the robot's legs are slogging through the water. I mean, you just feel there's a very physical thing going on there.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I watched the thing on the making. That's what even people that don't want to see the movie, or if they want to see something that might want to make them see it, they should watch the documentary on that about the making of the robots and especially the cockpit area, because I can't remember how high and how low, but it actually moves really high and really low and side to side, he really did that on purpose to, you know, kind of really so that the audience would feel like the pilots were in jeopardy, that they weren't sitting in a nice, tight, safe cockpit or something. Mm-hmm. So they were really moving around. But he said, they said, I can't remember. I thought it was like 25 feet up or 25 feet down and all different things. And he basically said he created a torture device because he said it really jerked him around. And then, of course, in the different scenes, they have water going inside and electrical sparks, you know, everywhere, which they said was really difficult, you know, dealing with, you know, electricity and water in the same, like, area and everything. But yeah, I mean, he really wanted to do that, and I thought that was one of the strongest things as far as making a connection with the audience, that you did connect with the pilots and felt vulnerable with them, and at the same time, when they threw the punches and stuff, you kind of, whatever, felt empowered, you know, I mean, it just really connected you, kind of that kinetic energy or whatever to what was going on.
Yeah, I would be very interested to have seen this, of any movie to see in, what do they call it? Real D or 4D or what's
the
that?
IMAX 3D?
No, the
D-Box?
The D-Box, that's it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I want to see this in the D-Box because I have seen actually three movies in D-Box seats. And
you have?
I actually have, yeah.
What did you see in D-Box?
I saw mainly because everybody was telling us we had to go see it in the D-Box, but the sequel to Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Okay.
Which was actually, it really was. I mean, it was a phenomenal, it was really, really awesome. And especially with that one, especially the better quality and the higher companies or whatever that are doing it, even if it is kind of cheesy like that movie or whatever, they spend so much attention on like even the camera movements, the chairs move. Like if the camera is slowly zooming into something, it slowly moves your chair forward. And so like even with like just the different, aside from the big things, even just the things like that, it just makes it so grand and so you really feel like you're in the movie. Hmm. I mean, it's really awesome. I saw we also saw like the Navy SEAL movie. I can't remember what the name of that was, but that was pretty bad because it had a series of events. And I will say the D-Box seats are more smooth than anything that you'll be in at like at amusement park. And I live in Florida, so we're around Universal and Busch Gardens and Disney and everything. And the D-Box seats are much more smooth, than any of those things that they have, in the 3D, even in the newer ones. So you don't really tend to get jerked around a lot, but the problem is when you do something like the Navy SEAL movie, there's a lot of shaking because they're jumping out of the airplane and then they're flapping in the wind. So it's just constantly like shaking you. And then they land on this road and everything, which is all gravel. So then you're shaking some more and then they get picked up by like a Jeep or whatever. And then that's shaking going down the road. And then they go to literally you see everybody that was in the D-Box seats were like turning, cause you can control the intensity. Like everybody was turning it down or they were going to like lose their popcorn. Cause it's just like, you're shaking for like 20 minutes straight. And it was just, it was crazy. but we did, and I can't remember what the other one I saw, but I did see another one in D-Box, but definitely things like this, I just, especially stuff like this would just be, I'm sure it would be phenomenal.
If I were to see a movie in a D-Box, this is the one, because it just, there is that movement and momentum and just that ground shaking and, there's a lot of weight to this movie where you're seeing things happening and the way that the robots move, it feels real. Oh man, that's just cool. And the creatures too. Yeah. I mean,
they also, I was just going to say real quick, they also really put a lot of time and energy into the water and getting a certain look that they wanted and a certain feel with that. And I even wonder how that would feel with the, with the D-Box, with the kind of the sluggish moving around in the water and all that. But they, yeah, it's funny, they actually consulted like a lot of paintings and a lot of I don't know, it's really cool all the, they, because they put a lot of time and energy into that. And he even said that was like a fourth character or a fourth element that they really looked at as a character in the movie.
Yeah, and the water effects were pretty cool because they weren't realistic. It was kind of hyper-realistic.
Right.
It looks like something that could be realistic and looks like the way you might imagine these huge waves around these huge things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, it definitely had its own sense of physics. And everything had its own sense of physics. That they created a world that it felt real. It may not be our world. You may not be able to build these things in our world, and they may not work in our world the way that they do on the screen, but they feel like they should work somewhere.
Right. So. Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly – it's funny because I just watched something else with him, and that's exactly what he said he was going for. He was like to make it look real and feel like a real world, even from like all the little details of the posters and everything else in the background and different elements. But he said, he's like, yeah, it's supposed to feel real, but he's like, I didn't want it to be totally like our world and stuff. And he was, you know, even said like that he wanted the feeling that he got when he saw Godzilla when he was little and Godzilla threw a tank, but he didn't want it to feel like that there were people inside the tank.
Yeah.
He wanted the same feeling that he got when he saw those and he wasn't thinking about those things.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a G.I. Joe cartoon feel to things here, where people, the main characters were in danger, but no one else was.
Right.
You know, they evacuated everything, and that was okay. I mean, this is kind of getting into, it wasn't a response to Man of Steel.
Right.
But I have seen people kind of compare the two, where in Pacific Rim you have the same mass destruction, but any destruction you actually see, you aren't seeing too many casualties happening along with that. Because he wants you to have fun watching these monsters and mech fighting each other. So, all right. So we talked a little bit about the special effects and the creature design and that sort of thing. What'd you think of the story?
It's so tough because it's like, yeah, I think he could have done more story-wise, but I know that he had no intention to. So it's because he did kind of want the all ages kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't want to, you know, get too big or too deep. And I think, and it's funny, I was talking with somebody about it today. There's actually, if you pay attention, there's a lot of little poetic moments, but because of the kind of popcorn summer filming style, like those poetic moments get kind of lost unless you're actually looking for them. And so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wish that there was more. I think I had said too before to a few different people when they were, cause they were already talking about a sequel, like possibly being greenlit. And I'm like, oh no, it's like, don't do, cause then it's going to get sequelitis. And then it's just going to count on the fact that there's going to be a sequel so that this doesn't have to have a totally complete feeling. And I don't know if that affected any of it, but I know they had every intention of doing a sequel when they did this because, well, and people that see it will know why and where they could probably go in the sequel. But you
don't feel like they're only going to do that. Like, you don't feel like they're setting up just...
Right, right.
You know, it feels like you have an ending to this movie, I really, sincerely doubt there'll be any kind of sequel.
Yeah, but, I don't think so either. Unless it just gets really huge overseas,
or really huge on DVD.
Yeah,
which is also possible. Although, well, we'll get into that when we talk about do we recommend it. But so, yeah, I mean, the story is very simple, though. It's basically Top Gun.
Right.
Where you have the one, you know, the main character who loses his co-pilot and then has to get convinced to go back and fight again.
Right.
It's also Independence Day, where you have aliens invading and humans, you know, kind of having to figure out what to do about that as the aliens are overwhelming them.
Right.
I mean, it's basically you've seen this movie before when it comes to the story. What makes it different is technology.
Right.
And by that, I mean both in the world and the technology used to make the movie, and characters. There's some characters you haven't seen too many times.
Right.
You know, although there are some stock characters. There's some geek characters that you've probably seen before. Now, Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
His character, I guess you've kind of seen before, too.
It's a new twist on it, though, I would say.
It is, and I liked him. I liked him well enough, and I liked the geek characters. It's funny though, because one of the geek scientists is the guy from Torchwood. And I'm watching this movie and I see this one character toward the beginning. I'm like, is that guy from Torchwood? No, he's not. And then the very next scene or a couple scenes later, the guy from Torchwood I was thinking and I was wrong about actually shows up. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's weird because I was wrong about – and now he's here. I was not expecting that.
Well, I thought the one scientist looked like J.J. Abrams.
Me too.
I think that they did that on purpose.
Do you? I wondered about that because
– I really do, because everything about him and even the way he acted, it's just
– except for the tats. I don't know if J.J. Yeah. Abrams has the tattoos, but
– no.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I thought that exact same thing.
He totally looked like him and acted like him. And I would seriously expect that they probably said, you know, that's his character type or whatever is the J.J. Abrams kind of character.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I totally thought that too.
He was definitely the hip geek.
Yeah.
You know, and although he wasn't very likable necessarily. You end up liking him, but he wasn't the nicest guy or the best motivated guy as far as having noble intentions. But
no, yeah.
Yeah, so the story, it's a simple story. But again, it needs what's the story there to do? The story is there to bring robots against monsters and to have them, you know, have a reason to be together in water.
Well, and that's one of those areas where I feel like he was kind of paying homage to the classic stories of those things. In my opinion, I think he limited himself because he was trying to pay homage to those things. So he was telling kind of a simple story of, you know, those things to get them together.
But do you ding him for that?
No, it's.
I mean,
I don't. I think successfully wise, I probably do, because I think if it could have been a little bit more creative and stuff, I think there might be a bigger audience for it, but. And better like word of mouth, other than just all there's cool explosions, blah blah blah, you know. And even though a lot of people have said that they really liked the characters, even though like you said, I mean they cut out a ton of the character stuff, but a lot of people still liked them and cared about them, and that's what, you know, even a lot of reviews I read said, you know, you come for the giant robots and the monsters, and you'll stay for the humans because you care about them or whatever's going on with them, and you kind of connect. And. And I agree, but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I can't fault him for making the movie he wanted to make. I mean, that's
no, you can't, and you can not like it, but
right.
But yeah, I just go back to, you know, if I was making this movie, and that's what I ended up doing was, well, I'm making this movie, and this is the way I want to make it. How would I feel about people saying, well, this stinks, you know?
Right? Yeah,
your movie stinks. You stink. You know.
Yeah, well, and I agree with people though too that they like the positive vibe that it has, and like that they like that feeling. With so many negative or kind of bad feeling movies and things out there, or they get really 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 dark in places. A lot of people have actually commended him for, you know, really putting forth the effort to, and you know this as a storyteller. I mean, especially when you're going for kind of a certain feeling or whatever, sometimes it's hard not to go down a bunny trail or whatever that's kind of tempting, but yet you know whatever you're aiming for a specific audience, you're kind of trying to do a certain theme or whatever with the story, and you only
have a certain length,
right? And you know you could go that route, but you really probably shouldn't, and it takes a lot of, you know, kind of creative restraint and stuff to do that and to maintain, you know, the vision. I wish it was a little bit more dark. I wish it was a little more intense. I wish the music was cooler and more modern. but there's a lot of people that did really speak to. It's just, unfortunately, they're in the minority.
Yeah, I wish that, you know, I like how positive it is, and I like that these dark places where it goes have positive but realistic positive endings.
Right.
You know, the main character is dealing with the death of his brother.
Yeah.
Which happens in the first, I guess I just did a spoiler there, but if you haven't seen this movie, it's probably because you're not planning on it, and I'm trying
nobody's
to convince you to.
Nobody's going to see it, yeah. Nobody's going to
so
see
I'm,
it.
So I'm, you know, but he's dealing with this loss, and then we cut to 5 years later.
Yeah.
And he's had time to deal with it, and he's still, you know, it's still there, but it's like he's at the end of dealing with this loss and trying to, you know, move on with yeah. his life and that kind of thing. And I like that. Then you also have another character who she's dealing with loss as well. And when they do some flashbacks to where, you know, she was in the middle of Tokyo and, you know, it's actually no surprise. I knew her story as soon as I saw her.
Right.
I knew, maybe not as soon as I saw her, as soon as I realized the relationship she had with the mentor character, with Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as I realized, oh, she was taken in, he's like her father figure. Oh, well, her family yeah. died in a monster attack, and that's what right. she wants is vengeance. Yeah. And, you know, it's not that deep, but you can relate to it, and you can feel like, okay, yeah, there's something to that character that I like. But again, she's had time to work through her loss, and, you know, she's not going into a dark place of right. vengeance. You know, it really is. These are people who want to do good to help the world.
Yeah.
And the right. world's not letting them, you know, right. they yeah. shut down the program.
Yeah.
Okay. But wait, that's kind of a cliche, but that's okay. That's okay. But, okay. So, we've kind of talked about special effects, style, the acting, anything you want to say about any of the actors there?
I think the
two scientist characters were fun.
Yeah.
And Idris Elba is commanding.
Yep.
And everyone else was kind of, you know, they were solid and did what they were supposed to do. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be, I'm with you. I really hope that there's a director's cut at some point where we can see the extra hour to really see, you know, I mean, that's a lot of time to cut out with a lot of character stuff that, who knows?
I'll have to say when I saw or heard that about that he said that, part of me wondered how boring was that too, though.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, we're cutting this character stuff. Well, maybe because it's kind of boring compared to everything else that's going on around it. So I could see it actually being a good thing. But I would like to see it like you. So.
Well, yeah. And I'm sure like my son was there. He's 13. I mean, he followed most of it and got into it. He probably would have been bored with that stuff, you know. So, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it did connect to a wide, you know, wide audience. So.
Yeah, and that's something you have to consider. Anytime you're making a movie or telling a story, you have to consider your audience and who is going to want to see this movie and why they're going to want to see this movie and what they're expecting to get out of it. And a lot of people seeing the movie, if they knew it was about monsters anyway, because the right. title doesn't tell you that.
Right.
But what were they expecting to get out of it? They were expecting to get spectacular monster fights.
Right.
And did they get spectacular monster fights? You bet they did.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Well, let's do this. Let's say now if we recommend it, who we recommend it to and why, and then we'll kind of talk about how it stands up against other kaiju movies or other really anime mech type things. So who would you recommend this to, and do you recommend people see this, and how do you recommend they see it? I think that's a bigger question in some ways for this movie.
Well, most people that are seeing it are seeing it, I wouldn't say most, half of the people that are seeing it are seeing it in 3D. So I mean, I did not see it in 3D because I had a lot of people to pay for when we went to see it. So I was like, you know, I'd rather see the movie and not in the best, but it's like, but obviously in the ultimate form would be to see it in IMAX 3D with in D-Box seats would be phenomenal. And I can tell you that everybody that I kind of talked to, we had an IMAX 3D showing of it right next to us at almost the exact same time. And everybody was coming out of there with such a big smile on their face, I wanted to smack them with their 3D glasses because they were so happy. And of course, they are also happy because because people that saw some of the first showings for the IMAX 3D got a big Pacific Rim poster too.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, so but I mean, I have, that's the thing I have heard from people, is just that people that have seen it in 3D were just like absolutely blown away. And I mean, I would definitely recommend people doing that. And you know, I'm obviously it would definitely make it worth it. And I would really tell people that to try to see it earlier in the day when prices are cheaper, but try to see it in 3D, try to do IMAX, try to do the best you can.
Yeah.
I would be very interested, and I haven't really read any. I would be interested to hear how the D-Box version of it is with all the moving and everything. I bet it would be pretty phenomenal, especially from being experienced and being in those and stuff. And I would just imagine, you know, even just with the waves and stuff, it's probably rocking you back and forth. And even that, like I said, with the kinetic kind of connection you have to the pilots in there. I mean, just to be moving at the same time they are.
Right,
and,
right.
I mean, it must be, especially for me being because I'm probably more of a robot geek than I am a monster geek. So that would be pretty close to heaven for me. I mean, I would be pretty happy after I did something like that. But I think it would be phenomenal for anybody that could do that.
Yeah. And I definitely recommend, I have to divide this answer into two halves, but on one hand, I recommend people seeing it in the theater and not waiting for it to come out on Redbox or whatever.
Yeah.
And the reason is it's just so big and so immersive. Right. And yep. I did see it in 3D. I didn't see it in IMAX 3D, but I saw it in 3D. And I don't necessarily recommend that you should see it in 3D because, you know, it really was a good, solid 3D. It wasn't like a gimmicky kind of thing at all.
Right.
But the big screen, at least,
yeah.
See this movie somewhere big, somewhere loud, and let yourself get immersed in the world and just enjoying the visuals of this movie, which it's a beautiful, beautiful, kinetic movie. On the other hand, if you're going in expecting Hellboy 2 or Pan's Labyrinth, you're not getting it. You're not going to. It's just, that's not the movie he made. Now, if you want to see Pan's Labyrinth, I do recommend a movie for you called Pan's Labyrinth. Okay. and you know, he made that movie already. And if he wants to make another movie like that, I will be right in line to see it. But, you know, I was sitting back and thinking about this kind of thing where we want things from people that are, you know, that we're familiar with. And so when I go to see a Guillermo del Toro movie, I kind of went in with expectations for what a movie by him should be. And I very quickly found myself enjoying this movie and kind of being annoyed with it at the same time.
Right.
And then I realized, well, why am I getting annoyed? You know, this is the movie he's making. I've seen Pan's Labyrinth and I can see it again. I have it on DVD and I'll probably watch it again, you know, in the next year or so. I enjoy it. I don't enjoy it. It's not like a fun movie. It's very dark, very depressing movie.
Yeah.
Very brutal and violent movie. But, you know, it's the world he creates there and the story he's telling. And so I definitely, you know, if you are not someone who goes for, you know, the big popcorn movie, so to speak, then you're probably not going to enjoy this one too much. But the cool thing about it is there are a lot of connections to and similarities to Transformers, the movies. And all the things I liked, which is very few, about Transformers, that's what this movie is, you know?
Right, yeah.
This movie does all the things that I want to see in a Transformers movie. And I guess that kind of leads us into the last question here, which is, how does this movie stand against other kaiju movies? And then also, how does it stand against other, you know, robot movies or robot shows even? Because I was reminded very much of Robotech here.
Right.
You mentioned Gundam.
Yeah.
You also, I think, did you mention, no, you didn't mention Voltron. I don't think anyone did that.
No.
We mentioned Power Rangers, you know, there's all that kind of thing going on. And then you have the kaiju, you have the giant monsters destroying cities.
Yeah.
And so what do you think there, you know, how does it stand up against some of those other, other movies or TV shows or anime in this milieu?
Yeah, I don't, especially when it comes to, I don't know if I've really seen a better giant monster movie. I mean, and I guess it kind of comes to what you're kind of what you want from that giant monster thing. If you want it to be, you know, just really dark and scary, or if you want it to, you know, I mean, because there's such a wide range from like Godzilla to Cloverfield to, you know, it really, to me, it kind of depends on what you want as far as that goes. But I mean, I can't think of a giant, like, I mean, I can think of different monster movies that I liked them and might like more like Aliens or something like that, but not like a giant monster thing. I can't think of one that I really think is done better overall, especially with all of the special effects and all of the stuff that is done. Cause there's a few out there where they don't show them as much. And like, I actually did like that, that one, was it Korean or something? That one,
the host.
Yeah. I mean, like I like that, but I mean, I don't even know if I'd consider that a giant monster movie. Cause it wasn't,
it's on the border of, is it a kaiju kind of thing? Is it a giant monster or not? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, that's like, for me personally, I don't think I've seen a better monster movie. I mean, unless, I don't know, you're going to, you know, classic stuff with Godzilla or King Kong or I don't know. It's really tough to, I'd say it's really tough to do a better monster movies because they're not, you know, monsters don't have a lot of brains and stuff. So
yeah. Well, the monsters are a metaphor, you know, and I don't know what in this movie the monsters are a metaphor for necessarily, although the, you know, like you said, it seems like the robots are more the metaphor.
Yeah.
That's going on there. I would agree in some ways that I don't think I've seen a better looking monster movie. Now, mind you, one of the things I appreciate about classic Godzilla movies is that it's a man in a suit, which,
right,
you know, you can go back and forth about the pros and cons there. But the cities that are being destroyed were handmade.
Yeah.
You know, and in the original Godzilla movie, when a building gets knocked over and you see a couch and a piano fall out of an apartment.
Yeah.
That's because someone made a tiny couch and a tiny piano and put them in that little room because possibly that's where the break is going to happen. You know, when Godzilla's foot smashes in there. And so it's about craft.
That's the thing. You appreciate it on a different level than the casual moviegoer,
yes,
you know, would.
I appreciate the craft. And, you know, the casual moviegoer back then appreciated the destruction and the effects and being put into a world that is so different and so, you know, and when it comes right down to it, giant monster movies are not very scary.
Right.
Because, you know, it's not very scary in the same way that, you know, like even a vampire movie is a little more scary because it's a human-sized thing doing things that, you know, in a house that you can relate to. But a giant monster movie, you can't relate to, you know, a skyscraper-sized creature walking through your city unless you're relating to it on a metaphorical level. Like Godzilla walking through Tokyo is a metaphor for Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right.
And the nuclear age and the dangers of, you know, nuclear bombs and that sort of thing. And so with this movie, again, I don't know where the metaphor would go with this movie, but it's definitely a beautiful looking movie as far as, you know, comparing it to other monster movies. And it goes right up there, I think, with like your original Godzilla, your original King Kong, as far as being a groundbreaking type of movie with just immersive effects, unlike anything you've seen on the screen before.
Yeah, and you know, and I would say, kind of like what you said about the Transformers movies, I kind of feel like that's what they did with the monster movies. And you know, too, like they do everything that I like about different monster movies, like they do right. They do those right things in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the effects and with the way that they do things. I mean, they take the best of those different things, and I think that they do them well.
So let's talk about Voltron and Robotech. And
oh, gosh.
I want to know, though. Here's something I really do want to know. Is that something that Guillermo del Toro cited as an influence here? Because it seems to me like it's got to be there. Is this something he said, yeah, I used to watch monster movies, and so I decided to add robots to it. But I feel like there's some Robotech in here. You know, I definitely feel like there's maybe some Gundam here, because wasn't there like a connection between you and your mech with Gundam. It's been so long.
Yeah, well, and I think they've done different elements. With different, because there's been like 15 different Gundam series now.
Okay,
I think they've done different takes on those things. The same way they've done stuff like that with Macross and different things now. That there's so many different versions of it and everything. But yeah, I have not heard him specifically name. I mean, he said robot. He said robots and mecha and different things. And I haven't really heard him say anything. I think somebody did mention like Evangelion or whatever to him, and he didn't even like say that by name. I mean, he didn't even say that was. I think he was just taking it as a whole, and I don't know. He probably does like monsters better than robots, so he probably gets more specific with the monsters. But yeah, but with the because he would name Godzilla and he named other things, but when it came to the robots, I haven't seen or read or heard of him specifically referencing anything like that. But
yeah, because I mean, you've with this, you've got the pilot and you've got the giant robots, and it just feels like a Japanese cartoon from the 80s that I would have watched when I was a kid, or more so probably in college, where I actually was like actively seeking out anime movies and series, you know, that kind
of
thing.
Well, and even like you were saying about Voltron, you know, there's multiple, you know, especially when it's in the robot form, there's multiple people inside of it.
And,
you know,
and Power Rangers too.
And Power Rangers too.
Because really, when it comes down to it, this feels like it could be a big screen, huge, big budget Power Rangers movie that they'll never ever make.
But I think he did it just to tick Kobe off.
That could be. He's like, I know that Kobe is going to try to sabotage my next movie, so I'm going to make my next movie to be almost like Power Rangers, just to make him mad.
Oh. Yep, yep.
All right, well, you have any final thoughts about Pacific Rim and that movie? And then I'm going to ask you to tell people where they can find you online, because you're not just a movie watcher.
I agree with you. I think there's a lot of people that should see it. I really did like it. I think, if people didn't see my post, I actually took an elderly friend of mine to it, and she was actually blown away by it too. And you know, I think it does appeal to a wide range of people, and I definitely do recommend it. And you know, I think. And for people who kind of do want to get more out of it, I would say keep your eyes open, because there are a lot of little kind of poetic moments. And one of the things that really did stand out to me that I didn't even, it's so funny because it's just so there and it's so simple. But one of the things that they had said was that it was all, you know, that it was also like a story about loss and survivor's guilt.
And that every
character had kind of like a mini arc that dealt with that. And that's true. It's just you kind of miss it a little bit because of everything that's going on. But when you like look back on it, it's like, yeah, that's true. And there's more, you know. And I will say my daughter practically stood up and cheered that the two main people didn't kiss at the end of it. That they just put their heads together. She's like, "Thank you," you know. And I mean, there's stuff like that they actually do. That's a little different, you know. And that, you know,
it's a little more mature.
That I did appreciate. Yeah.
It's definitely more mature than Transformers.
Yeah. No. And
in a good way.
Yeah. And I didn't feel. Yeah. And I didn't feel embarrassed having my son or anything there, you know, because of certain scenes or anything in the movie. So, yeah. I mean, I really recommended it. I think it's awesome. And like you said, even if you only have to see it in regular quality, I would say see it on a big screen, because it's very big.
Yes, and I'm not sure if I'm going to own this movie. I do have a collection of monster movies, and my only thing is because it was so big.
Yeah,
it was like when I saw Dark Knight on IMAX. I did not ever want to see it again. I saw it in IMAX once, and I'm like, I can't watch this on my TV again. And I ended up watching it on my TV so I could see the sequel, you know, Dark Knight Rises. But I was just like, I want the memory of this movie to be IMAX. And I'm not going to watch it on my TV.
See, this is one of those movies that might be great for, because I actually have some friends with a projector where they've actually projected movies on the side of their house and stuff. Like, this might be a cool one for that, seeing it You know, it'd be really awesome if they did it on the side of a building, but
I wonder if this would be a movie where I could sneak into the church and
yeah.
project it on the sanctuary screen.
Exactly.
Oh, probably not. In fact, definitely not. So if anyone from my church is listening, which I don't think they are, but I'm not going to do that, so don't worry about it. Wink. So, okay, so one last thing, JS. I want to let people know where they can find you, because you are not just a movie watcher. You are actually, you've composed music, including the music that I use for my Welcome to Level 7 podcast. You write comic books like Pistol Fist, which is a comic book series that came out right about the time I was first starting with some of my comic book stuff. And so we kind of came together with the same publisher there. And that was kind of my first connection with you years ago. Where can they find you online? Where can they find your music? Where can they find you as a creator? And where do you want them to find you?
Yeah. Well, people can friend me on Facebook. I think it's JS Earls or JS dot Earls or something like that. But probably the best place is my regular website is jsearls.webs.com. That's webs as in webs.com. And that's where there's a lot of my stuff, and it has links to other things. And I also have a thing up on Bandcamp, which is, I believe, jsearls.bandcamp.com or something like that. But
Facebook is facebook.com/js.earls.writer. Your Bandcamp, jsearls.bandcamp.com, and it's JS Earls. There's no other punctuation in there. It's just the letter J, the letter S, and then Earls, E-A-R-L-S. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much for filling in for those slackers who have missed out on an experience to behold. And to be experienced. I mean, I'm looking at your Facebook right now, and you have you have two Pacific Rim pictures as your profile pictures. One being the ripoff of
Jaws.
I love that. That is awesome. So, all right. Well, JS, I really do appreciate it, and thank you so much. And honestly, my original intention for having you on Strangers and Aliens was actually to talk about some of your comic book stuff that you've done. But this is cool talking about movies and
definitely. And that,
and we'll get you in on some comic book stuff later. But
yeah, sounds good.
All right, well, thank you very much. And unless you have anything else to add, I'm just going to go ahead and say thanks for listening, and Godspeed, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Strangers and Aliens Summer Movie Series. You can email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. That's 1-804-372-5436. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go to our website, strangersandaliens.com, leave a comment on the blog, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens. We're also on Twitter, Strange and Alien. Check us out.
Bye.